This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. The highly anticipated Procter & Gamble site in Berkeley County broke ground Friday, and starting October 1st, job applications will be available online. Liz McCormick reports.
I want to thank all of you today for joining us this morning for what is truly an exciting day.
State and federal officials came together Friday at the future site of West Virginia's first Procter & Gamble plant in Taylor Station near Martinsburg. Event-goers learned that in just a little less than 2 weeks, job seekers within 60 miles of the West Virginia site can begin applying online for positions. The hiring process won't actually begin until spring of 2016, but those interested are encouraged to start applying as soon as possible. Governor Earl Ray Tomlin says the addition of the PNG plant will make the state more competitive.
When you have a worldwide known company like Procter & Gamble, other companies say, well, if they're going to locate in West Virginia, there must be something going on there. So I think that that's one of the things that helps our development office to say that, look, Macy's, P&G, Toyota, the big companies are coming to West Virginia. We got lots of room. We want you to come too.
The sort of skill sets Procter & Gamble is looking for are in the mechanical, electrical, manufacturing, and packaging fields. The plant is expected to open by fall of 2017, and by 2019, it's expected to employ around 700 full-time workers. Tomlin says the state's $500 million investment in the plant is worth it.
And this company, it's not going to be temporary. It's going to be here a long, long time. So for several generations, we'll be able to start work here, probably and retire from here. So it's you know, in the long term, it's going to be a great thing for our state.
Procter & Gamble donated $30,000 to Blue Ridge Community and Technical College in Martinsburg to provide training for those interested in getting jobs at the plant. Yanis Skoufalos is the Global Product Supply Officer for P&G. He says choosing West Virginia for the new site was the best choice and the most strategic.
It was all about proximity to the big population on the eastern of the United States. A wonderful infrastructure, a very welcoming and engaging state and local administration, a team that really opened us at many degrees of freedom, as well as looking into the standards of the labor force in the state, their education, their ability with mastery, the community colleges. We looked into that, and that's how we chose.
Skoufalos says the Eastern Panhandle location closes a gap between many other Procter & Gamble sites on the East Coast. It will allow delivery of up to 80% of products to the eastern half of the U.S. within 1 day's transit. The type of P&G products to be made at the West Virginia plant has not been announced. The 460-acre site in Berkeley County will be the second manufacturing facility Procter & Gamble has built in the U.S. since 1971, and it will employ the fifth largest Procter & Gamble workforce in the country. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in Martinsburg.
This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:47. Partly sunny in the northwest today, but mostly cloudy elsewhere with a chance of rain. Temperatures in the 60s and 70s today. Mostly cloudy statewide with a chance of rain tonight. Lows in the 50s. A chance of rain on Tuesday under partly cloudy skies with highs in the 70s. Sunshine by Wednesday.
Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by Sunlink Business, investing in new technology to bring faster internet speeds to Charleston, now available at speeds up to 150 megs. Information available at sunlinkbusiness.com.
A professional gambler named Abe Bache and his girlfriend, Goldie Toothman, who owns a local brothel, are the main characters in a new novel by Glenn Taylor. The novel, called A Hanging at Cinder Bottom, is set in McDowell County's Red Light District of Keystone during the turn of the 19th century. Roxy Todd sat down with Taylor recently to talk with him about where these stories came from.
During the boom days of coal, places like Keystone were said to have their fair share of shootouts, card players, and red light districts. 100 years ago, Characters came to McDowell County by horse or by train from all over the world. Like his first novel, The Ballad of Trenchmouth Taggart, Glenn Taylor's latest book weaves imagination, history, and tall tales into a story that feels like it was dreamed up late at night around a campfire. Taylor is a native of Huntington, West Virginia, but his father grew up in Matewan, where a lot of those stories were told, mostly by men.
I think as a kid growing up, you're always going to be around uncles and other acquaintances who make jokes about, we're such and such. Well, he's headed down to Cinder Bottom, Well, he's gone down to Keystone for the weekend, And it became clear at some age that what they were joking about were whorehouses, for lack of a better term. Houses of ill fame, if we want to sound a little more proper, because they were still going. I was born in 1975. And there are some who will tell you that you could still entertain that kind of notion all the way up through, maybe the 80s. And so I kind of heard about it as a kid. I don't think I paid much attention and, of course, was just innocent as could be, so didn't understand any of it. No, I'm just kidding. But I've heard about it for quite some time.
Will you read one of the opening scenes of your novel, A Hanging at Cinder Bottom, the one where the epic poker game is about to begin?
I would be happy to. This chapter is called Queens Full of Fours, February 17th, 1897. It was Wednesday. Snow had stuck to the mountaintop, but not the road. It was the day on which a game of stud poker commenced in Keystone that would last 13 years. It wasn't intended to last that long. It was intended instead to carry in the kind of money most couldn't tote. And it would do so in a quiet fashion, for the game itself was the only of that day's events not publicized by handbill in the growing town. You must see the lobby to believe it, the papers said. Grand opening, Alhambra Hotel. It was Henry Trent's most ambitious project to date, a 3-story brick building with 4 columns in front. He'd build it on the southwest bank of Elkhorn Creek, where the moneyed folk had moved. 5 men had been invited by courier to sit at the big stakes table. One of the 5 was Abe Baich, then 17 years of age. Having already cleaned the pockets of the men at his daddy's saloon, he had a reputation. Most had quit calling him Pretty Boy Baich in favor of the Keystone Kid.
Your heroes in the novel sort of take on the rich villains who basically run Keystone. Why'd you decide to kind of pit these characters that have been taken advantage of by the millionaires, basically, and they take them on? Why'd you decide that?
I think part of it has to do with I'm a sucker, like many readers and writers, for a good underdog story. I just always have been. I think it maybe is something that is generated among those of us born and raised in West Virginia who then leave the state and you kind of have an underdog mentality, perhaps. Part of it is probably also because I'll just go ahead and say it, I've never been very good at plot. And so the long con was a way for me to kind of keep myself on track. I had them take on the powers that be in a very calculated way because that helped me calculate how to write the book. And speaking of the structure of the book, I actually had to go back in time for chapter 2 all the way to 1877 to show how Abe's father, Al Baich, first came to town from Baltimore, having only recently arrived in Baltimore from Germany. And so here, his first night in town, he's watching Rutherford, the embalmer and so-called chief of police, who has a terrible fear of snakes, towing a coffin out of town. At midnight, drunk, he watched Rutherford trot his horse out of town with a fresh-cut coffin in tow, the rig drawing lines in the dirt. He stood in the dark with Trent, a lantern on the ground between them. Rutherford winced at the buggy seat's unforgiving springs. He muttered about there not being enough moonlight to see. He gave a wave as he passed below the balcony veranda of a long-roofed house. The 2 men perched up there did not wave in return. They leaned in slant-backed chairs, their feet propped on the balustrade. They were the Beavers brothers. They liked to think that they saw everything from their high, covered domicile. Trent could see their cigar tips glowing. He watched his man pass beneath. He watched Harold Beavers lean sidewise in his chair and take something from a covered basket on the porch floor. Harold stood up, clutching a pair of writhing black rat snakes. He leaned over the rail and aimed and tossed the snakes upon the passing Rutherford. One landed on his shoulder, the other on the swell of his trail saddle. He screamed as a small child would scream, and he pulled free of his boots from their stirrups and leapt to the ground, where he clawed at the mud, pulling himself from the scene, panting in the high notes of a woman in labor. The Beavers brothers laughed as hard as they had in months, and so did Henry Trent as he watched from afar. When he'd understood what he'd seen, Al Bates followed suit, chuckling uncomfortable at what evidently passed for humor in his new environs. Rutherford stood up and drew his lengthy sidearm and shot both snakes dead where they'd slithered against the ditch wall. His horse just stood there, long since gun broke. Rutherford did not look up at the Beavers brothers where they roared, nor did he turn to regard Henry Trent. He holstered his pistol and climbed back aboard by way of an extra-long fender, and he rode off in the quarter-moon dark.
Glenn Taylor is a fiction writer, and he teaches creative writing at West Virginia University, and his new novel is called Hanging at Cinder Bottom. Glenn, thank you so much for coming in and chatting with me.
It was my pleasure.
And that was West Virginia novelist Glenn Taylor speaking with Roxy Todd. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.